Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
It's Devin Nunes. Welcome back to the podcast. I want to thank you every week. We continue to get more and more listeners. And this week, we're going to continue our China series that we've had going for the last couple of years. I know a lot of you have heard Gordon Chang and others. This week, I want to bring on Senator Andreas Borges, who actually represents in the United States, or in the California State Senate, rather, part of the city of Fresno, part of the district that I represent in the San Joaquin Valley and goes to the north. But we're not going to talk about crazy California politics because that would be its own show that we've talked a lot about over the years. But we're coming to you from Wahoo's Tacos, great place. Obviously, they need your business because they're suffering during this COVID crisis. We're outside in the patio, social distancing, of course, but they're open for business and they have great fresh tacos. But with that, Senator Borges, we're actually in your district. And this week, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Devin.
And probably a little odd. for you. We're not going to talk about the craziness that goes on in Sacramento. But you were selected by the House Republicans. Our leader, Kevin McCarthy, put you on a 12-member panel, a commission that was set up by the Congress to look at China. You've studied this issue in the past. You had a master's degree in international policy, and then you got your PhD, actually, in Greece, and you've done some part-time adjunct teaching on international studies. So kind of a odd place that normally you don't get to talk about this stuff, but we're really pleased to have you, that you'll take some time and talk about the report that you guys have put together, that every year you have to put together a report.
Exactly. And thank you for bringing up background. Normally, you know, I'm obviously involved in state affairs and prior to that, local affairs.
Right.
But I did my master's and my PhD on China and taught for over a decade at San Joaquin College of Law in Clovis, in our backyard, and also as an adjunct over at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies in Monterey. So I have about 20 years worth of academic and professional experience, having earlier done a short stint over at the U.S. Embassy in Kazakhstan and done field work in Western China. So it was an honor to be appointed to this commission. And as you mentioned, every year we are tasked with consulting with experts in security, in economics, in healthcare, in all the related fields, and proposing a list of recommendations to policymakers such as yourself on how we can better position America in dealing with the emerging and existing adversary that we know as China.
And I will say that on the House Republicans on the Intelligence Committee have had an investigation going on for nearly a decade. We were the first to talk about Huawei and ZTE and the challenges that we have globally, where they're trying to take over the communications architecture all over, which is to do one thing only, that is to spy on other countries.
Certainly.
And to gather data. But also the Congress had set up this commission back, I think, around 2000, 2002. It's bipartisan. I mean, you're kind of an unusual appointment because typically you don't put politicians on there.
Yes.
But because of your background, you were chosen by the Republican leadership to represent us on there. And the Senate has, you have a counterpart from the House, Democrats, and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. All people that have a background in China.
You have to be a China expert to be appointed is what the rules provide in the statutory authorization.
And in addition to that, each year you guys have a report that's due every fall.
Yep.
And it's constantly updated. So take us back to the report that you finished, what was it, last November?
November.
It was your first year, right, as part of this process. How do you guys kind of decide, as you comb through information, what needs to be presented to the policymakers, you know, specific to these China issues of importance?
Great question. The board, as you mentioned, is equal amount of Democrats, equal amount of Republicans. And all of the folks bring a different mindset and skill set to the commission, whether they be national security backgrounded or healthcare or economics. Everyone is supposed to have a strong expertise on China. What I find terribly interesting and motivating about this commission is that even though it is appointed by congressional and Senate leadership and on a bipartisan basis, we endeavor and are successful in making certain that we have bipartisan recommendations. That's unusual, whether it be Sacramento or D.C.
Because there's not objections. Essentially, you guys have to agree on everything that goes into the report.
Exactly. So what we do is we hold hearings. We meet with individuals, whether it be FBI, the CIA, or folks in agriculture or pharmaceuticals. The entire breadth of the American experience is considered, and over the course of a year, it includes travel overseas in some instances. Oftentimes, now in a COVID reality, we're doing mostly video conferencing, but working with staff, we hone down a list of recommendations. We try to make it very manageable. It could be anywhere from 12, maybe 15 or 20. Very concrete, specific recommendations for policymakers at the federal level to consider. I had two myself that were incorporated and agreed upon by the commission and were presented to Congress in the annual report.
So let's talk, Senator, from your perspective, that what's in the report from last November, and then I know you had a recent report on Hong Kong, which we've acted on. Maybe we'll get into that just a little bit at the end. But give us kind of the highlights of the top two or three of the recommendations that you guys made last year that you think the American public, because, you know, this audience is not just the San Joaquin Valley,
course,
with your constituents in mind. It's all over the state of California and all over the nation. And we even have international listeners. And we have a lot of listeners in Canada for some reason. I have no idea why, but we have Canadian listeners. So I always want to say hello to my Canadian friends. But what do you think that this audience needs to know is that the most important things at the highest level that Congress needs to be and the White House need to be focused on?
I had a briefing this morning, as a matter of fact, with the FBI. And one of the questions that was posed, and the individual answered, he literally had recommended that when you talk about China from an American standpoint, take a step back. Use your imagination on virtually every aspect of life, whether it be the medicine in your cabinet, the telephone that you use, the rail system, and anything in between military and economic interests. Everything that is happening with China includes something that we should care about. In our neck of the woods, agriculture, for example, and beyond. So every year when we come out with this report, we're looking at every sector. So last November, one of the things that we were keen on is Wall Street. Now, when American businesses or even foreign businesses in Western Europe, when they apply to go on NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, there's a number of disclosures that are required. That goes into the transparency of the entity, the worthwhileness of the investor class, and whether or not this is viable, and its projected earnings, and so on and so forth. However, when you have Chinese-related entities or China-direct companies that are on NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, they don't abide by those same disclosure requirements.
Right.
So what you have here is you have investors being asked to invest in these companies with minimal oversight and minimal transparency requirements, and it's simply not fair. And frankly, a lot of these have turned out to be bogus. So in one of the recommendations is that we make certain through the SEC and other related instruments of the state is that if you want a list on American exchanges, whether it's Pacific or Chicago or New York, doesn't matter, that you are held to the same standard as American companies. That's only fair. Well, that's ground shaking. And in the light of Hong Kong in what's gone on over there, one of the concerns is whether or not you're going to have a Chinese business migration out of the American exchange into Shanghai and Hong Kong.
You know, and since you brought up Hong Kong, I was going to get to it at the end, but I think this is probably a good segue into it. Just recently, in the last few months, Congress passed legislation. You guys had completed a special report. We implemented this legislation, and now the Trump administration has acted on it. And essentially, we've said, look, Hong Kong, no more special preferences.
Nope.
That is something that you guys agreed with and you recommended to the policymakers.
And I want to make certain that the comments that I make are my own.
Right.
I don't speak on behalf of the commission, and I want to make certain that is clear. I think it was a very smart move because it was obvious and necessary that if we give this preferential treatment to Hong Kong based on an old agreement between the Brits and that protectorate, and then when it converted hands from the British back to mainland China, is that it was going to be an autonomous or semi-autonomous zone. And even though it's within one system, it's two distinct areas, mm-hmm. and requiring different treatment. So the idea of democracy, openness, transparency, rule of law, and the judicial system. These are all things that made us believe that Hong Kong should be treated differently. Right. What we've noticed
now... Well, it had the long story. It was part of the British Empire. Exactly. It was turned back over in 97. And then at that time, you know, I think we were all hoping, because China had entered the World Trade Organization, the policymakers at the time, it was before I got there, the concept was, hey, hopefully Hong Kong will be a model. It'll continue to boom and be a robust international business center. And China will take advantage of that. And slowly, China will have to adopt some of these rules that you've been talking to. Unfortunately, the opposite has happened. Beijing has
the greatest failed assumption probably in modern political history.
Yeah, good point.
Is when Clinton approved of China's accession to the World Trade Organization, it was that assumption that folks had that China would eventually, through integration and more overt capitalism, that it would open up and be more like how we do business in the West. Completely wrong. It has not done that at all. And so Hong Kong has derived these special benefits, and there's good reason to believe that special treatment and all the benefits derived from that were finding its way into mainland China, whether it be through forcible tech transfer or other areas of industry that were being pilfered by not just American companies, but also Western European companies as well. Mm-hmm. So that was the recommendation that we made to policymakers. We also were very early on in concerned about the supply chain when it came to mm-hmm. pharmaceuticals. Now, this is pre-COVID. This mm-hmm. is back in November. We have absolutely gutted over many, many years our interest in looking after strategic assets, and pharmaceuticals, medical support, mm-hmm. and is certainly a strategic asset. So COVID has showcased what we already knew was a deficiency and has exacerbated onto the global stage. Right. So it has shown us that we need to make certain that we divest from the outsourcing model that used to exist, to make certain that we have adequate pharmaceutical supplies for our domestic consumption, as well as the military overseas that currently, this is surprising, the U.S. military has been relying on Chinese-made pharmaceuticals. Now, that is a security risk that we can't tolerate.
Yeah, and similar to the supply chains, issues are going to be, we talked about the communications architecture
exactly.
across the globe with Huawei and ZTE. And what people have to understand is, if you own a business in China or you're invested in China, you are part of the Chinese Communist Party, because the way their system works, they can have the controlling interest. And so essentially, yep. the money is flowing and basically directly back up into the party leadership.
Can I give you an example that
please.
A lot of folks
yeah.
may not know? So imagine start up a business in China. You're an American entity that decides to open up operations in Beijing. Well, part of that that Beijing-controlled apparatus requires that Communist Party officials have a cell within your operation, meaning if you have a board of trustee meeting
right.
or you have a board of director meeting, everything that is said must be done in the presence of a party official who then reports everything back to headquarters. So imagine having, you know, an intelligence operative mandatorily
seated
at the
tail. You probably have to pay to spy on you.
Exactly. It when we talk about the lack of imagination, what we mean from the commission standpoint is that we need to educate better Americans and use their imagination to second guess everything that we do, because China has been so methodical, so systematic and cunning, that for us to imagine that our supremacy cannot be questioned, I think would be foolhardy. We must take aggressive action, and there's some things that have been done on your watch and the current administration that are absolutely appropriate. These things should have been done years ago, yeah. but they're happening, and I'm very thankful.
Well, look, President Trump did the unthinkable, which was he said, you know, damn the torpedoes, we're going to put on tariffs, and despite heavy pressure from both political parties that were opposing tariffs. In addition to major companies, the international sector, our allies, all of them oppose these tariffs that Trump put in place. And that's led to our trade ambassador, Lighthizer, being able to implement phase one of this agreement. Hopefully we'll get to phase two. It's unknown now, I think, because of COVID and whether or not the Chinese are going to actually fulfill their commitment to buy a certain amount of American products. I mean, really, we're trying to not only decrease the trade deficit, but also more importantly, stop them from stealing our intellectual property rights. Yep. And Andreas, that's one of our senator. That's where one of the places that I want to finish with here, because it's something that we've been focused on. House Republicans on the Intelligence Committee have focused on this directly, and we have legislation that goes into this. But these centers, these nonprofit centers, have been developed all over the country, and they develop these Confucius centers, and they go by other names, and they've been recruiting and paying not only Americans to be part of this, they get paid, they get recruited to go to China, and also they bring students over, give them visas. And, you know, I just have to believe that the students that get the visas are high up in the Chinese Communist Party. They have some, yep. You know, essentially we're bringing children of Chinese Communist Party people here. And look, I'm not saying they're all communists, okay? But at the end of the day, their family's there. They have no choice.
People.
They're all part of the party. And so I know you guys have looked at some of this. Give us a couple things that you guys have looked at.
So one of the recommendations, you know, my background is in education. As I mentioned, I was a professor for over a decade and still serve in that capacity on a limited basis. One of the concerns that I had is everything you talked about, whether it be a Confucius center, whether it be a research entity affiliated with a major university, or just sending students over. We know now much better that this is part of a vast, elaborate network of information gathering agents. Now, one of the things that I think could be helpful, and I proposed this and it found its way into the recommendations, is that when a student from a non-market economy, and I'm putting it in those terms, mm-hmm. so it can include others as well, but China mm-hmm. specifically, students from non-market economies, when they apply for a student visa, I think it's terribly helpful for us for them to disclose who is paying their tuition, what area of study they are endeavoring to pursue, and if there is a relationship, especially in STEM, you know, science, technology related areas, if they are affiliated with any machination of the military or any other instrument of the state. Mm-hmm. Now, will that information be completely accurate? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. Will people play games? Absolutely. But I think it's important is that when we do allow students in tech sensitive areas, in evolving markets of biotech, artificial intelligence, the future, if you will, that we are not just educating these folks for them to steal and pilfer and bring right. it back to Beijing, so that if they lie or misrepresent on their application, that would be grounds for removal.
Yeah, and they're very, very clever because what they're doing is they're sending people over here in order to find those Americans or people that are either working for American companies. They don't necessarily have to be Americans. The professors, and they're looking to identify these people and then recruit them.
Absolutely.
And then giving them very high-paying job offers to relocate from the United States to China. And in some cases, you don't even have to move. They'll
remote.
Let you live here. You have to go there a few times a year. But they're trying to get the very brightest people in America, and they're recruiting right from here.
It's called the Thousand Talents Program.
Yeah.
And when something has a name, you know it's institutionalized, it's invested in. And listen, I want to make certain that we don't overstate the issue. We want foreign students to come to the United States. We want the best and brightest to be at our universities.
Right.
But we also must be smart about it. We can't continue to allow this slow leakage from America, the way that it's been happening for well over a couple of decades, mm-hmm. because we're at a period of great inflection that if we don't take serious corrective action, then China will have been so better situated that we won't be able to recover. And that is what I believe it's important that we inform the public of the vastness, the breadth, the complexity and sophistication of what China's threat poses to the United States and what we need to do to change our mindset and take corrective action.
Well, that's why Congress created this commission.
Absolutely.
And we're so thankful that you and others take your time on a volunteer basis. You don't get paid to do it. And take your time to contribute to the public policy realm and the decisions, the big decisions that the United States of America has to make. That the Trump administration is making some very difficult decisions, but it's always good to have the work that not only you but also your predecessors have done since this commission was created. So, Senator, I want to thank you.
Thank you.
And next time we'll have you on talking about the craziness of California because there's so many wild things we could talk about in Sacramento. Okay. But we'll keep on a positive front. We'll talk about China this week. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
This is fun.
Absolutely. This is Devin Nunes. This is our China series. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.